Blog Talk Radio.
Explosive. West Coast shit, my niggerish. Wait the track. Girls are used to turn they back. Causing me to yank they arm and pose like I would do them all. Now say it.
Yes, yes, yes. What is going on, everybody? This is Inside the Octagon, brought to you by the Sports Grid Podcast, which you guys can listen to every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm your host, Clint Lua, but I'm not alone. On the panel with me, I got my man, Leo, and David on with me as usual. Fellas, what's going on?
Hey,
what's
guys, what's happening?
How are you doing?
Hey, if you guys don't mind, I just want to take over the show a little bit and give a full Star Wars spoiler. So let's get into it.
I wish you told me you saw Star Wars, because I have so many feelings about this movie. I went to the premiere. I bought my tickets like months ago. I saw it last Thursday night at the premiere, and dude, I was like so bitterly disappointed in this movie, man.
Well,
I wish you told me that you saw this movie.
No,
bro.
For the record, I haven't seen it. I wouldn't do you guys so dirty as to spoil the best movie in the.
Is that
of the
a
year for you guys, but
joke? Is that
that's a Colby Covington joke right there, brother.
Oh, okay. Oh,
well, unlike Colby Covington, Leo says spoiler alert ahead of time. Colby just flat out told you a spoiler right in the first sentence of his tweet. That was pretty brutal. I wouldn't even known. I wouldn't even saw it if I wasn't following Luke Thomas. He likes it, and apparently Twitter believes anything that your people that you follow like, you got to see. So that kind of ruined it for me. But I did see the movie this past weekend, so it was pretty awesome. We know Leo's not going to see it because he doesn't like anything that's awesome.
For the record, I thought the tweet was hilarious. I thought it was a hilarious tweet. I saw the movie already, so it didn't spoil anything for me, but I thought it was a funny tweet.
Yeah, it definitely, if nothing else, it certainly got Colby Covington's name out there to a lot of people, for better or for worse, and it really did get, bring some more heat to him, to where whenever his next fight is going to be, and I'm hearing it might be a while because rumors are that him and Tyron Woodley are going to be coaches of the new Ultimate Fighter series, so we have to wait for the filming and then all the episodes to come out, but it'll certainly bring some attention to that. I'll tell you, if nothing else, It's the perfect opportunity for Tyron Woodley to gain a major fan support base if he can go out there and beat Colby Covington, because there's a lot of people who did not appreciate that spoiler.
Yeah,
so,
I think that'd be great. I can't believe that's really happening.
I guess, from Colby's perspective, I understand exactly what he's doing. Good on him for getting his name out there for better or for worse, but to me, it's just kind of becoming a little bit cringeworthy at this point. I don't think it's really working either way. I don't want to see him any more than I did before, and I hate him because I see right through what he's doing. So I don't know that it's necessarily working for me, but I'm sure there's some kind of fan reaction out there. So I'm sure that's all he really wants is a reaction. So hopefully it kind of works out for him.
What'll be interesting to see as time goes on, if how much of this is authentic and how much of it is an act. Yeah, sure, there is some theatrics to it, and that goes without saying. But when you look at someone like a Conor McGregor, you can see that when he does his spiel, when he's talking and cutting promos, that there is a lot of actually him in there doing it. It's not just, he doesn't go Chael Sonnen where he goes on full character mode. He mixes in how he truly feels and just his own personality with some extra sprinkles of let's elaborate it. The Diaz brothers are very much known for that as well. So as time goes on, I would like to see how much of this Colby Covington we're seeing is authentic to how he truly is, or is it purely just a full-on act? That's all it is. To me, I think if it's more so he's authentic, he probably will start to get people to come around on him a little bit more often, because people start seeing this is just how he is, as opposed to if it's an act, like you said, Leo, okay, we see Trey do it, you're just trying to do this, and once you lose, it's over, so okay, got it. I'm very curious to see that as time goes on, and, speaking of which, we got the new year coming up, so we're 2018, we certainly are going to get a lot of answers.
Yeah, just I'm wondering if he has any kind of material backed up for when he turns a babyface. If he's going to make that babyface turn, he's going to have some good stuff up his sleeve.
Well, see, that's the thing. If he's being authentic, then he doesn't have to worry about a babyface turn. Doesn't have to worry about he doesn't have to worry about that at all. If he's just being authentic, it'll just come off naturally. But we could talk more about this just in a little bit. But fellas, hold the phone. I truly believe we got to get to what is the most awesomeness news in 2017 going into 2018 we could possibly get for the world of MMA. That's right. That's right, David. It's here. Floyd Money Mayweather, USC, Octagon, four-fight deal, $1 billion on the line. David, since you seem so enthused by it, I'll start with you. What do you make of Mayweather and the UFC maybe striking a deal?
So they already made odds for if Floyd Mayweather will fight in the UFC in 2018. So the odds for if he's going to fight next year in the Octagon, yes, he will fight, is plus 500. And no, he won't fight in the Octagon is minus 900. So there's very overwhelming odds that he's not going to fight in the Octagon in 2018. And I don't believe I'm going to have to go with the odds makers on this one. I don't see him fighting in the Octagon next year. I don't see him fighting ever in the Octagon. What I do know is I know Floyd loves attention. I know Dana White knows any publicity is good publicity. So Floyd came out and said this $4 or $5 billion contract, which sounds a little absurd to begin with. I mean, WME just bought the UFC for $4 billion, so why would they just spend $1 billion getting Floyd to fight a few times? I know it'll be profitable, they'll make good money, but I just don't think they're in a position to just spend that kind of money when there's so many other great super fights that we could be getting. And I think what we were talking about is they could do the Zuffa boxing where Floyd, you know, beats down Aldo, Holloway, fighter after fighter, and that would be even more absurd, I think. I don't know. It's fun to talk about. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's great to think, oh, you know, Floyd versus Max Holloway in the Octagon or something. You know, it's fun to talk about, I guess. It's fun to think about, but it's a little ridiculous, and some of these things are a little ridiculous at this point. You know, and I don't know. I don't like to buy into these sorts of shenanigans, you know, because I know there's really, like, no chance that this is going to happen. I somewhat believe that Conor and Floyd was going to happen a year and a half ago. I thought, oh, you know, these guys could really make it happen. Brock Lesnar versus Jon Jones. Oh, I believe this is going to happen. But Floyd in the Octagon, I don't know. I'm not getting the same vibes off of this. I don't think Floyd wants to get embarrassed in the Octagon.
Leo, what about you? You know, obviously with these reports circling around, and then recently Floyd denying the reports that he would step in the Octagon, but if he did, he'd make $1 billion. Do you think as much as he loves money, there's any way he would turn down stepping in the Octagon if $1 billion were on the line?
Well, David clearly just doesn't know what hard work and dedication can get you, because Floyd Mayweather is going to go into the Octagon in 2018, and he's going to make the UFC great again for all of us peasants just waiting out here and waiting for, you know, for Floyd Mayweather to come back and be great again. But, I mean, come on, man. Is Floyd Mayweather going to start taking head kicks at 40 years old? Is he going to start, you know, learning how to sprawl at 40 years old? What's he going to do if he gets into an arm bar? Like, how would the UFC possibly match up Floyd Mayweather after we've seen, you know, in the past, James Toney came into the UFC and he wasn't given a slouch, man. He was given Randy Couture. He was just thrown into the wolves. What would the UFC do with a guy like Floyd Mayweather? Are you gonna, what kind of favorable matchups can they possibly give him if he goes in and fights MMA? I mean, even freaking Conor McGregor would turn him into a wrestler, right? I don't see exactly what the line of thinking is behind it. I do understand that, you know, they want to get some headlines, and it is, I guess, kind of fun to talk about. I mean, this is the freak show of all freak shows, right? I agree with David. There was some possibility that Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor could possibly happen, and that was a fun freak show. You know, I'm not going to deny that I had fun watching it, but Floyd Mayweather in an Octagon, that's just a little bit far-fetched. I really can't wrap my head around what could they possibly do with Floyd Mayweather in MMA. that wouldn't absolutely ruin his career. He could possibly, you know, get seriously injured in the octagon. So I don't know. I mean, I would like to see how this plays out over the next couple of weeks. Maybe they are trying to, you know, ramp up those negotiations for the new TV deal. I mean, if they want $450 million a year, that could kind of, I guess, pay for a little bit of what Floyd Mayweather is asking for. I mean, that, you know, that $450 million, that would be done in two fights for Floyd, right? So I really don't know how legitimate these talks are, but I guess we're about to find out in the next few weeks, few months.
No, certainly we're going to find out just how serious it is. And before we came on the show, obviously we were all talking about it. And David and you guys both brought up a good point in the fact that what if Floyd came on as kind of a recruiter type slash promoter type? Now, of course, I don't think the UFC would want to take on another promoter, but if he was able to maybe look at some boxing guys or help find some other low-level fighters and bring them in, it is a possibility. There are some MMA guys like Dominique Robinson and Kevin Lee and others here in Vegas who train at Mayweather's gym. So, you know, maybe I'm not sure. If nothing else, the obvious matchup would be him and Conor McGregor. Like you said, Leo, will Conor McGregor then turn into a wrestler like he tried to do against Nate Diaz, or would he just go to how he normally fights in the cage? That would be very interesting within itself. And also, if nothing else, I say this. CM Punk says he's ready for another fight. I think that's a perfect matchup. CM Punk, Floyd Mayweather, hey, that could work inside the octagon if you ask me. Two big names, who's the best? The biggest name in boxing or the best in the world in professional wrestling, and they meet inside the octagon. That'll be pretty entertaining in itself. Leo, I'll stick with you on this particular one. Let's say in the wildest dreams, Floyd does accept a contract to come to mixed martial arts. Obviously, Conor's the obvious favorite. If you're the UFC, how much control do you give Floyd Mayweather in how this is all presented? Do you go co-promotions, the UFC and Mayweather Promotions present? Do you allow maybe Floyd to wear boxing shoes or specific shoes for the octagon? Do you maybe make special rules? Hey, you can't go to the ground for more than 30 seconds. That was a rule in Pride when Krokop and Fedor, I believe, no, Vanderlei first fought. They had the ground rule. Do you do something crazy like that, or do you go straight up James, Tony, Randy Couture? Hey, straight up MMA rules, UFC promotion all the way. What do you think?
Well, I mean, if they were to do anything like that, I think they'd have to probably do it outside of the U.S., where the UFC is basically its own commission. They act as their own commission. I mean, you'd have to go through so many loops to be able to do something like that. I think in Nevada, which obviously would be the number one place to do something, like a Floyd Mayweather fight. But if you're going to start tinkering with the rules, I mean, that's really undermining the UFC's product as well. I think you brought up a good point earlier where it's more likely where maybe Floyd Mayweather would step in as a kind of a promoter. I mean, he's been talking about getting into the MMA for the last couple of years. And, you know, obviously this Zuffa boxing thing might be more of a reality than we thought initially. So I think it's much more likely that we're seeing some kind of a partnership brewing between Floyd Mayweather and the UFC, as opposed to some continuance of a fighting career for Floyd Mayweather. Like I said, at 40 years old, I don't think Floyd really wants to start learning about kicks and takedowns or anything like that. It's just not Floyd Mayweather style. Floyd does not really want to, he plays by his own rules, right? He doesn't really want to play by anybody else's rules where it's going to give him some kind of a disadvantage. So, as you said earlier, maybe it's more of a business type of a partnership that these guys are kind of talking a little bit right now. And, you know, it doesn't hurt that they're just kind of insinuating a fighting career when in reality all that's really going on is some kind of a business partnership. But as far as a fighting career, I mean, like I said, the UFC is not really going to want to undermine their own product by – yeah, Floyd Mayweather can wear one boxing glove and he can grab onto somebody's deep hands. You know, people are going to be wearing deep hands now against Floyd Mayweather. They can't really go out there and start making up rules left and right to favor Floyd Mayweather. And then, you know, at that point, that's legitimate wolf tickets, right? You're just selling a shitty product that, you know, people are inevitably going to buy because it's Floyd Mayweather plus whoever, possibly Conor McGregor. But what kind of a real fighting event are you going to be putting on if you're messing with the rules in such a scenario?
David, I'll swing it over to you. If by some miracle Mayweather was to come over to the UFC, do you tinker with the rules? Do you make exceptions? Or do you go straight up, hey, these are rules, you got to abide by them?
No, I don't think you make any exceptions for anybody. I mean, I don't care if Jesus is getting into the octagon. You know, at that point, Leo is absolutely right. It sort of undermines the sport when you tinker with the rules a little bit in any sort of way. If Floyd were to get into the octagon, he's no more special of a human being than any other MMA fighter just because of his net worth. And I don't think you should be able to make these sort of any sort of adjustments for Floyd. And at that point, it's not even really an MMA fight, you know, if you tinker with the rules at all. I like the idea of Floyd getting into a business relationship with the UFC. I think that's a great idea, and I think that's an idea I and a lot of other fans can get behind. We saw how smooth the process was for the Mayweather-McGregor fight. Both sides talked about how easy it was to work with each other. It was the smoothest negotiation process. Everyone was happy behind the scenes, and I think that really told a story of its own, where that probably built a great relationship between Dana and Floyd and Ellerby. So I think I could get behind the idea of a business relationship, but an MMA relationship in the octagon, I don't see that happening. And if it were to happen theoretically, I don't think they should change the rules for Floyd or for anybody else. If Floyd wants to fight in the octagon, then he fights in the octagon with MMA rules, not any sort of other rules, because it's not really MMA anymore. So if he wants to fight in the octagon, let him fight, but let him fight with the rules in place. But I don't see it happening anyway.
Fair enough. Now, let's switch gears slightly here, and let's just take out the idea that he would fight at all or step in the octagon. Okay, got it. But we did bring up the idea of partnership with promotion, Zuffa Boxing. What if the UFC was to bring in Zuffa, was to make Zuffa Boxing happen and use Floyd Mayweather as a bridge to gap the UFC going into the boxing world? That way they can already have some connections, already have some, okay, look, Floyd, you know some fighters, maybe some of your young guys. We can put on the card with some guys that we pick up, maybe even some of our MMA guys who want to try boxing. They can come up, you know, kind of like a bridge. Do you think it would be smart business for the UFC and Mayweather to get to do a partnership under Zuffa Boxing to make that happen and put on just pure boxing events, given Mayweather does have his own promotions, but let's be honest, the fighters he's got under his promotion, they're not giving the big fights like he did. Do you think that would be a smart deal for the UFC to use him as a bridge? And David, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think that would absolutely be smart. And I think that's kind of, if you read between the lines, I think that's kind of what we're headed towards. Because the money team and Mayweather promotions, his fights aren't gaining the exposure, or his team's fights aren't gaining the same exposure Golden Boy is getting or Top Rank, you know, and Floyd wants more exposure for his team. And I think the UFC can bring that exposure. And it's great for the UFC also because they're negotiating this TV deal. And I don't even know if the money team has a TV deal. I don't know what channel their fights are on, but, and that's not a good sign. But I do know that if they partner with Zuffa Boxing, that'll give Dana a negotiating point, like saying, "Hey, we've got the money team on our side. We've got a great rapport of boxers already." So I think it's great for the UFC for negotiating that TV deal, and I think it's great for the money team
for getting those boxers the exposure that they want. So I think it's a win-win for both sides. And I think that's what we're sort of headed. If Floyd is still in contact with Dana, which looks like it's the case, I find it hard to believe they're seriously talking about Floyd fighting in the Octagon and not just a bigger business deal where Floyd will end up with a good chunk of money out of this. Dana will end up with a good chunk of money. WME, everyone ends up happy with this deal.
Leo, what about you? Can the UFC use Mayweather Promotions as a bridge to bring Zuffa Boxing to life and, as David pointed out, kind of use it as a negotiation tool to say, hey, not only will you get the best in MMA, but you'll also get Mayweather Promotions and boxing events as well. Hey, now you can swing that TV deal off for a little bit more. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, like we've been talking about, this is something that makes a lot more sense where, you know, Floyd Mayweather on his side, he already has some budding talent. As David pointed out, not necessarily the most, the most recognizable names in boxing, but there's something of a structure already in place from the money team. And then the UFC has the exposure. They have a lot more eyes on them than the money team would. So I think this would make a lot of sense just for them to join assets and just kind of build something up from the ground up. So to me, this is a lot more likely of what's going to happen. And at the same time, you have these disgruntled UFC fighters that were not happy with their pay. Everybody's talking about that's the new fad, right? They're all talking about, I'm going to go into boxing because there's, the grass is greener on that side. And so now the UFC has all these fighters under contract who want to go box. Well, you're under contract with us. If you want to box, you're going to have to box for Zuffa Boxing / the money team, right? So I think it just kind of covers a lot of bases for the UFC. It covers a lot of bases for Floyd Mayweather, where now maybe he doesn't have to front up all this, all the money out of his own pocket in order to make his own promotion. Now they can just kind of unify assets and, okay, you guys have the TV deals and the promotion and the marketing, and I have the fighters. So this is something that makes a lot more sense, in my opinion, that they would just kind of come together in the unification of assets to basically build a promotion from the ground up.
Now, certainly, I think that would be tremendous. What I'd be interested in seeing if this type of deal was to happen, would UFC guys be allowed to go fight boxing? I know, Leo, you said, hey, you want to box, you got to fight on our brand. But what if someone like Max Holloway, who's your featherweight champion, what if he wants to go box? Do you take the risk of him going there, potentially getting injured, getting knocked out, so now he's got to wait a little longer to come back and fight, or just getting flat out embarrassed, and then, oh, how are we going to promote you as a champion in our sport? But either way, I think it would be a tremendous way for the UFC to gain more exposure and then also give their fighters a chance to go out and see, can they make a living in the boxing world? Is it as easy as they think it is? And what would the pay structure be like? I mean, could the UFC really get away with having Zuffa Boxing and those boxers are making more than the UFC champions and the UFC fighters are making? I think then the floodgates would be open for fighters to go towards Zuffa Boxing if they have aspirations for that. Last thing on this before we get into actual MMA news and stories and whatnot. We know James Toney tried his hand at mixed martial arts, and I feel like that the UFC didn't want to get embarrassed, so that's why they gave him Randy Couture, someone they knew could take care of him. But I thought they kind of mishandled it. They could have used James Toney's name and fan base to give him a couple easy fights, build up a bigger fight, but you don't want your sport to get embarrassed. McGregor goes over, takes on Mayweather. It happens. This question is for both of you. If you're the promotion, if you're UFC, do you put a restriction on your top fighters going over there? We've heard Stipe Miocic and Anthony Joshua jaw at each other. You got Francis Ngannou now with that crazy knockout power. Deontay Wilder out there has talked about possibly going into the world of MMA since it's so hard for him to get fighters to accept matchups with him in boxing. Aldo talked about going to boxing. Tyron Woodley's talked about doing a boxing match against Andre Ward at one particular time. Tony Bellows called out Michael Bisping. So there is some matchups to be made, or at least some fighters who might consider that. if you're the UFC, do you stop your guys from going over, or do you allow them to go over? And then secondly, what about that pay structure? David, I'll start with you.
Well, if they want to go over, let them go over. I say, because I honestly don't believe 99% of the people will end up going over anyway. As for the pay structure, I mean, this has been a hot topic in MMA for as long as I can remember, and it's going to remain a hot-button issue. But I think there's bigger money in boxing, and there's a lot of reasons, a lot of dollars as the reasons why these fighters want to go to boxing. But I think Zuffa Boxing will give them that opportunity. But with Zuffa Boxing, you're not going to get that big pay that you're expecting out of boxing anyway. If they want to try it out, Zuffa Boxing at least gives them an avenue to try boxing, see how it goes for them. But I don't believe that 99% of the fighters who talk about wanting to go to boxing are serious about going to boxing. And I think that once Zuffa Boxing gets into place, I think we're going to see that. I don't think we're going to see Jose Aldo step into the ring with the Money Team fighter. I don't think we're going to see Stipe Miocic fight Anthony Joshua or Francis Ngannou versus Deontay Wilder. You know, I don't think there's a bat's chance in hell of any of these things happening. But Zuffa Boxing, with Zuffa Boxing, they could at least say, well, you have the opportunity, we have it for you right here. But I don't think it's really going to make a difference in terms of these guys wanting to go and begin a boxing career. And really what they want is bigger pay. And you're not going to get it under the Zuffa Boxing banner. You're still going to get the same sort of pay rate. And there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered about Zuffa Boxing anyway. So I can't really comment further because I don't know much more. More will unfold in the coming months. But as of right now, I think that's where we're at. We're not going to see a lot of MMA fighters transition to boxing. And what we do get with Zuffa Boxing, I think we're just going to get a lot of newer names, so to speak. And I mean, that's pretty much where we're at right now with the whole Zuffa Boxing deal. So we'll find out more in the coming months, but there's just not a whole lot of information right now.
Leo, do you agree, or do you maybe see it differently?
Well, let me start by saying I'm not any kind of expert in the Muhammad Ali Act, but it's been in the news for the last couple of years, and you know, there's ongoing battles in the court system, and it sounds like there is some traction being gained that the Muhammad Ali Act could be expanded into the world of mixed martial arts. Now, I think under that act, it would allow, you know, basically combat sports fighters to be able to basically act as their own agents, and they would be allowed technically to fight in boxing if they so choose. I do still think that the UFC would want to protect its own product, and they don't want to send a guy like Max Holloway, who, as of right now, I mean, we're in the blessed era. He's basically he's got this aura of undefeated guy, unbeatable guy, and they don't really want to send him into the world of boxing and get embarrassed. I think under the Ali Act, he would be able to step into the ring if he really wanted to. I think, you know, there might be some stipulations under his championship contract, but I think at the same time, the UFC does want to protect its product, and they don't want to undermine, their best champions and their biggest stars at this time. So I do think that they want to do the best that they can to discourage their fighters from stepping into the octagon into the ring in this case. But I do agree with David. I think it would be kind of smart to call their bluffs, because I do agree that I don't think a lot of them really do want to box as they say they do. It's just a negotiation ploy to get the UFC to basically fork up the money. Like Nate Diaz is a classic example where he's more than willing to sit out for X amount of months in order to wait for the Conor McGregor fight or the big money fight they've been waiting for. And in the meantime, he's talking about, you know, I'm gonna start a boxing career because these guys won't pay me. Well, if the UFC calls his bluff, I really don't think that he's necessarily thinking about going into the boxing world, because I don't think that there's as many fights in the boxing world that Nate Diaz could make as much money as someone like against an opponent like, you know, like a Conor McGregor or anybody else in MMA. I think MMA fans are interested in Nate Diaz doing MMA, not necessarily boxing. So I do think that the UFC does want to protect its own product and not necessarily let these guys go out and basically get exposed in another sport. But, you know, if the Muhammad Ali Act becomes an expansion into combat sports and not just boxing, I think maybe the UFC is just trying to cover its own bases by doing this Zuffa boxing deal and a possible expansion with Floyd Mayweather and the Money Team.
Yeah, this is this is all unraveling before our eyes. So as time goes on, we'll have more information to share. It's certainly going to be something to keep an eye out for how it goes. I totally understand where you guys are coming from, but to be honest, I honestly kind of think some of these MMA guys would try their hand at boxing. These guys are ultra competitive. They do, you know, most of the guys who are talking about trying boxing are generally mostly stand-up fighters. Now, granted, that doesn't mean, we saw what happened with Conor McGregor. That doesn't mean they're going to find success there, but I certainly think that the eagerness to at least want to try it, and then when you look at the purse you can make in boxing as opposed to mixed martial arts, that's obviously a huge temptation as well. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how Zuffa Boxing comes about, what's the parameters in that, how's that whole layout and format going to be, and then how can UFC fighters be involved in it if they so choose to. It's certainly going to be something worth keeping an eye out for in 2018. Before we get to 2018, though, this past weekend we had UFC on Fox, and it gave us a pretty good card with a hell of a main event as Rafael Dos Anjos defeats former welterweight champion Robbie Lawler in a very, very impressive fashion. Leo, what did you make of RDA disposing of the Ruthless One?
Yeah, absolutely the most impressive fight of Rafael Dos Anjos' career, in my opinion. He absolutely mauled through Robbie Lawler. He neutralized him. He basically made him a fitting target towards the later rounds. He kicked his leg out, and Robbie Lawler was just as I said, just a stationary target where Rafael Dos Anjos could pick him apart for the better part of the last three rounds. And that flurry that he had at the end of the second round where I think he threw something like 45 unanswered punches, something crazy, and, you know, just the heart of Robbie Lawler to not go down after that that massive onslaught. And kudos to Rafael Dos Anjos for not punching himself out. You know, he was clearly looking for the finish at the end of the second round, and unfortunately he couldn't get it, but he was able to maintain the dominance throughout the fight. And I think the most impressive victory of his career, and certainly how do you deny him at this point the number one contendership at 170? He's been on an onslaught since moving up, and I think it just proves that weight cutting is not as necessary as we've been thinking for all these years. I mean, we see guys like Rafael Dos Anjos moving up in weight and finding a lot of success, a higher weight class, and they look healthier and better and faster. And kudos to Rafael Dos Anjos. He looked amazing, and I can't wait to see him hopefully fight for the title in 2018.
David, how impressed were you with RDA's performance, and did he do enough to earn himself the next shot at Tyrone Woodley?
Oh, I was absolutely impressed by his performance. It was funny when they were airing the fight, it said something like 80% of the fan vote or like 79% of the fan vote was going on Robbie Lawler. Everyone was betting on Robbie Lawler, so that's when I knew RDA was going to win, and he certainly lived up to that. I mean, I don't even know what to say. It was just such an amazing performance, and to say anyone expected that, it has to be lying to themselves, because I felt like RDA was going to win the fight, but I didn't know he was just going to absolutely demolish Robbie Lawler like we've never seen before. I mean, it was just one man who was just clearly the better fighter. And as Leo mentioned, that the end of that second round, I just thought at any minute Robbie Lawler was going to drop. Then I remembered this is Robbie Lawler we're talking about. He did eat like close to 50 shots from RDA, and RDA at one point gave up, just started going to the body more, and he was just tenderizing Robbie's body, and it really set up. He knew that Robbie wasn't going to go down, but he was setting up for later rounds that he was going to be able to go to the body, work the legs, and just continue punishing Robbie Lawler throughout the fight. And that's exactly what I did. And I think all that damage Robbie took early in the fight really hurt him in the later rounds and really neutralized him and didn't allow him to get any sort of momentum going. And that's what really helped RDA win this fight. If they ran this back again, if they fought again, I would find it hard to believe RDA to repeat this kind of performance, but this was a great performance. And I'm very happy for RDA. He's such a great guy, such a great fighter. I absolutely believe he deserves the title shot next because he's looked pretty much indestructible at welterweight. And I don't know what more you can ask for this guy to do. I know some people are calling for like a sort of number one contender fight for him, but I think he's, in my eyes, he's done enough for me. I know Tyrone Woodley wants to do the surgery, and RDA seemed a little annoyed at that. I watched the post-fight press conference because, you know, does Woodley want the surgery? But if, you know, one minute he wants the surgery, next minute he doesn't want the surgery. And RDA was a little annoyed by that. But I think, Tyrone Woodley wants RDA to fight a number one contenders fight. I know that. That's what Woodley said. So I think RDA has done enough for me, and I'd love to see how he can handle Tyrone Woodley. I mean, RDA is one of the more exciting guys in the division, so it'd be interesting to see what he can do against a guy like Tyrone Woodley, someone who's just so great on the ground. But RDA's got such good jiu-jitsu, and that would be an exciting matchup for me, and I'd love to see, and I can't wait to see that. That's the next fight I want to see at welterweight, not like a GSP Tyrone Woodley or anything sort of like that. That this is the fight I want to see, RDA versus Tyrone Woodley. So yeah, I think he's done enough for me. Has he done enough to the guys at the UFC? I don't know, but he's done enough for me. I think he deserves the next shot for sure.
Man, well, that's the end of the show, everybody. David took all the rest of the time that we had. So thank you very much for tuning in. Just kidding. You guys make some great points, and I certainly felt that, well, one, it was a very shocking performance. We knew RDA was going to be tough, and we knew that how he's looked in his previous two outings against Tarek Safarding and Neil Magny at 170, we knew, okay, this is going to be his truest test, and we're really going to find out just how good he is, and he looked phenomenal in this fight. The one flurry of punches where he landed 24 punches on Robbie Lawler against the fence. No, excuse me. For 24 seconds, he was throwing a combination at Robbie Lawler against the fence. And, you know, the commentators were even saying, is he going to tire his arms out? And obviously with his training regimen and his cardio and his strength and conditioning, that wasn't the case. But how savage is Robbie Lawler for 24 seconds? He's taking punches. He's head moving, shoulder rolling. And he's smiling the whole time at him. I'm like, is that all you got? I heard you could punch. Okay. That guy is truly – I truly believe Robbie Lawler gets hyped up for a fight by sitting in a dark room looking at a dark wall, and that gets him going. That dude is truly from another planet. One fight that I would love to see before the Tyrone Woodley fight would have been RDA and Colby Covington. I really would have liked that fight just for the parameters of, you know, he's a Brazilian champion taking on Covington, who's trash Brazil. But as I said, I'm hearing mixed rumors. One, Covington and Woodley might be the next coaches for the Ultimate Fighter because Woodley did opt for the shoulder surgery, which is kind of weird given Woodley was all in on fighting Nate Diaz at the end of this month, next weekend for UFC 219. But then when Diaz didn't accept it, Covington was willing to step up, and other fighters was willing to step up and fight him, yet he turned it down. I'm not. That wasn't a good look for Woodley, but RDA at welterweight is truly looking truly, truly impressive. And right now, he's the number two guy. I know Stephen Wonderboy Thompson said, hey, let's go at it. That would be a good matchup as well. Unfortunately, if Thompson wins, do you book him and Woodley for the third time? I don't think so, especially after that matchup that we had recently. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes. David, with you, I'll start with you on this one. Robbie Lawler, obviously, you know, he got dominated and he lost, but, you know, it looked like he had apparent left knee injury. We'll see the severities of that, but what do you do with the former champion now at 170? What do you do with the ruthless one?
Well, did you happen to watch that post-fight press conference?
I didn't catch all of it, no.
Let me just say, that was the most – that was probably one of the worst post-fight press conferences I've ever seen. It was empty. There was only like three or four journalists there, and the only people who showed up were Josh Emmett, Robbie Lawler, and RDA. But we got some good questions, Q&As out of Robbie Lawler. Let me just say, Robbie Lawler still looked so happy. He looked, you couldn't tell he just lost the fight and perhaps the worst decision of his career. He was in such good spirits. He was smiling. He already put this fight behind him. So I think if you're Robbie Lawler, and before this, he took a year off after the Tyron Woodley fight, after he lost to Woodley last July. He took a year off. Came back, beat Donald Cerrone, and I think that year layoff was good for him. So, but Robbie Lawler's at a certain age where you don't really want to take these extended layoffs anymore. I think Robbie Lawler's day as a champ are done. I don't see him ever challenging for the title again, but I think you could still get him in these really exciting fights. On top of that, the ratings for the show were the second or third worst ratings ever for a Fox card, which I was shocked. I thought it was a great night of fights, and I thought it was a great card. But when you look at the names, I mean, really nobody none of the names are recognizable. I mean, I knew everybody on this card except Josh Emmett, but this wasn't the average sort of fan favorite card. I thought Robbie Lawler and RDA could pull in better ratings, but that also kind of means, is Robbie Lawler not a draw anymore? Can he not sell paper? He won't be able to maybe sell on TV. I mean, he had some big fights with Johnny Hendricks and Carlos Condit a couple years ago that did pretty decent pay-per-view numbers, but he's just not. He's not a fan. He's still a fan favorite, but he's just not bringing in the numbers anymore. And I think that's the sad reality that we have to face. You could still get some good fights out of Robbie Lawler. I think he could still put on some entertaining shows, but I think Robbie's days as a big draw are, with a lot of evidence, his days as a draw are done. And I think his days as a contender are done too. But I mean, I'm still, anytime he gets signed to fight, I'll be excited to see. But Robbie himself said in the post-fight press conference he's going to take some time off, but he'll be back. But he's going to take some time off. I don't know if that's a great idea for him, but anytime he gets signed for another fight, I'm going to be watching. But I think, yeah, he's not a draw anymore, clearly, and he's not contending anymore. So that's where I stand.
Leo, what do you do with the ruthless one?
I'm actually on the other side of the table on this one. I do want to see Robbie Lawler take some time off because, I mean, he's been in war after war after war after war, and that's just not good for longevity. So I wouldn't mind him, you know, taking, you know, six, 7 months off and then see him back next summer. And I don't know how he'd feel about fighting a former teammate, but Jorge Masvidal and Robbie Lawler would get me out of my seat and you know, get me watching. So that's the fight I'd love to see him fighting next. I do agree with David. I think his days as a contender are probably past him, but that doesn't mean that you can't put him in fun fights against top-level contenders. So a guy like a Jorge Masvidal, maybe Santiago Ponzinibbio, who we just saw won this past weekend as well, guys like that, you know, guys that are just going to stand and fight Robbie Lawler on the feet and make it exciting, and it's going to get fans excited to tune in. So by no means do I think Robbie Lawler is done as an attraction. I think he's very much a fun guy to watch, but I do want to see him take a little bit of time off and see what the UFC wants to do with him and put him in fun fights, man. I mean, he's as exciting as he can get. So maybe Jorge Masvidal would probably be my top choice to book him up against.
Yeah. If you take a look at the welterweight division right now, guys are either injured or booked for fights already. or at least make the most sense. You know, Mazdoff probably is the leading candidate there. You do have Damian Maya number five, but Mazdoff probably does make the most sense for Robbie Lawler going forward. I still think he could be a contender at welterweight. I just think, you know, there are times where you just run into a chainsaw where, you know, either whether it was matchups or, you know, if you watched, you know, in watching a fight, there was something wrong with his left knee. He wasn't sitting down. There were times where he barely would get hit, and yet you could just see his left leg buckle some. So you got to imagine how much of an effect that had on him being able to move and then get some real twerk on his punches. I still think he could be a contender there. Obviously, he's got to get some pretty decent matchups going forward. And even though he lost in this fight, one thing I would say that at 35 years old and all the wars that he's been in, I really didn't notice a Robbie losing a step. I didn't notice him being someone who looks like he doesn't deserve to be in there anymore. You know, sometimes with these fighters, you'll start noticing as they get in their mid-30s, late-30s, and they've been in so many wars previously in their careers, you'll start noticing how they look a little slower, they're not able to react the same way, they're not taking punches the same. This one, I didn't see any of that from Robbie Lawler, so miraculously, I still think he has a good amount of fights still left in him at a high level. I think this one, he just ran into a bad matchup. I don't know if with the fighters moving weight, I don't know if there's somebody at 170 or maybe somebody who's at 155 or at 185 who's going to jump to 170. I don't know if there's a matchup there for him. The obvious matchup I think I would definitely try to make, but I don't think he's coming back. I would ask Nick Diaz, hey, Nick, you want to come back? I mean, you did knock him out one time. Do you want to see if you can do it again? But I don't think Nick Diaz is as interested in fighting MMA anymore, and that's totally fine. You know, it's a tough sport, a lot on your body, a lot on your brain. So I totally understand Nick if he just doesn't want to do the grind anymore. Talk about not wanting to do the grind anymore. It was very unfortunate that Josh Emmett missed weight by a tremendous amount, but he goes in and gets one of the nastiest knockouts we saw on the card against one of the top contenders in his own division, Ricardo Lamas. Vicious left hook. Leo, what did you make of Josh Emmett knocking out Ricardo Lamas in the first round?
Man, like David, I hadn't really heard of Josh Emmett going into this fight, and all eyes are on this guy now, man. I mean, emphatically knocking out a top contender in the featherweight division. That was absolutely a staple performance for him, and I think he jumped from unranked to the number five ranked fighter in the featherweight division. So the guys made his statement, and he went in there and handled business the way he should have. And as you said, I mean, the only knock on him was that he missed weight by a couple of pounds. So, you know, hopefully that those mistakes are going to be put behind him, and he can move forward from that. But a vicious first round knockout, and basically the first time he's on the main card in the UFC. So I think he's made a big name for himself, and hopefully fighters are going to be more willing to, you know, top ranked fighters are going to be more willing to step in against him now, and we'll see where he moves forward.
David, I didn't write it down, unfortunately, but this crazy stat that the commentators were making, three of the last four guys who missed for their fights ended up coming out victorious anyways. If you're taking who missed weight, sure, you still want to go out there and fight, you trained for it, you made all the sacrifices to do so, and you want to get that check. Is it kind of smart for you to go out there and do it, considering the odds kind of say you may not be the one coming out victorious? What do you think?
I think absolutely. You trained. I mean, go out there and do it. In the case of Josh Emmett, I mean, wow, kudos to this guy, because last week I said this is a high risk, low reward situation for Ricardo Lamas, and I was kind of like, that was kind of a head scratcher as to why he took that fight, because there was really nothing for him to gain other than a paycheck, which was probably enough reason for him. But yeah, high risk, low reward situation. Josh Emmett missed weight by 2.5 pounds, I think. Yeah, I mean, apparently if you want to win a fight in the UFC, just miss weight and the odds are in your favor at that point. I think it's if you go out, you train for a fight, if you're expecting to fight, then
I think you should still go out and continue to fight. And in the case of Josh Emmett, I mean, it turned out pretty well for him, and it turns out pretty well for the other guys losing weight. I heard that too. I actually heard them say that on air as well a few nights ago. But yeah, I don't know if that's just a coincidence or what it is, but Josh Emmett looked pretty damn good on Saturday night, and Ricardo Lamas didn't. I know it was a short fight, but he didn't seem like out of it or anything. You know, he didn't seem like he was too old or ring rust, or he still seemed. A capable fighter to me, but geez, this Emmett guy, yeah, all eyes are on him now, like Leo said. Let's see what this guy can do, because yeah, he really made a name for himself on Saturday night, so let's just hope next time he does a better job of making weight.
I believe Emmett said this was the first time he's ever missed weight, and that he's not going to do it again. He is from Team Alpha Male. He talked about in the pre-fight hype how he's trained with other fighters as far as Uriah Faber and Garbrandt to help get them ready for their big fights. So, the stage of fighting Ricardo Lamas on short notice wasn't going to be too overwhelming for him. It sure didn't look that way indeed. Now, he's moved all the way up to top five within a division. Leo, Frankie Edgar's next in line for Max Holloway. Cub Swanson just lost. Do you maybe look at a Brian Ortega, Josh Emmett as the number one contenders matchup? Or because Emmett missed weight, maybe you don't give him Ortega just yet. You give him someone else in the division first to prove that he can be consistent with his weight cut.
I mean, this was the first time Josh Emmett has really fought in the top of the division. So I would not necessarily want to put him up against someone like a Brian Ortega when at that point, if he wins that fight, you basically have to give him a title shot. So I would like to see a guy still in the top 10 move up and fight a Josh Emmett, and somebody who's definitely more willing to fight Josh Emmett because they're probably ranked lower than Josh. So I don't think it would make sense for Brian Ortega to take a fight with Josh Emmett, who's basically – I think he's at a point where he can kind of sit out. I mean, we've seen sitting out kind of backfire on guys before where a guy has a more emphatic victory than you do, and now he all of a sudden jumps ahead of you. But for Brian Ortega, I don't think it would make sense for him to fight a guy who's already lower ranked than him, and he was basically an unknown prior to last weekend. So maybe like a Korean Zombie. I don't know what his deal is with his injury recovery, but somebody like that would make perfect sense for Josh Emmett. Everybody knows Korean Zombie. He's a fan favorite, and they're going to be tuning in for a fight like that. So if he can get another victory over a big name like that, then Josh Emmett can certainly catapult himself into the top of the division. I just don't necessarily think that, any of the top three or four guys are necessarily going to want to move basically backwards to fight Josh Emmett, because it would be a high risk, low reward type of fight as well.
No, and that's true. There certainly is that obstacle that you got to get over as well. Maybe you say, hey, if I want to just stay active, I don't want to get rusty, I don't want to lose my momentum, just kind of want to stay in the flow, maybe take the fight. So it is going to be something to keep an eye on, what the UFC decides to do with Josh Emmett going forward. Again, with him missing the weight cut, are you really going to hold that against him because he did take the fight on short notice, or you kind of go overlook it and say, hey, look, dude, you don't have a history of missing weight, so we won't ding you as much as that. David, now you did bring up Ricardo Lamas not looking old, didn't look slow, and I totally agree with you. I think he just got caught with a tremendous left. And I know Leo has said this in the past, and I'm not a big. I know a lot of people aren't a big fan of it. I don't want to call him a gatekeeper, but is Ricardo Lamas just one of those guys to where he's a really, really good fighter? But like him and Cub Swanson, they just can't make that next step into being an elite-level fighter at the top of the food chain, title contention, and all that. Is that Ricardo Lamas right now?
Yeah, what a tough break for Ricardo Lamas. You go from fighting Jose Aldo about a month ago to fighting this guy no one's really heard of, and on top of that, you go out and lose. I mean, what if Jose Aldo had remained the fight for Ricardo Lamas? What if Ricardo Lamas beat Jose Aldo. Now he's in line for the next title shot. It's really such an unfortunate break for Ricardo Lamas. There's so many what-if scenarios. There's so many things that's probably racing through Lamas' head the last few days, and it's really unfortunate that this happened to him. Again, it was a little bit of a head-scratcher to me taking this sort of high-risk, low-reward fight, but, I mean, when you take these kind of risks because you want to get a paycheck, because you've done that training camp and you don't want it to go to waste, I get it, and it seemed like an easy fight, but it really wasn't going to do any favors for him if he won the fight, and it was going to hurt him tremendously if he lost, and that's what happened. Now, Ricardo Lamas, I think this was, I mean, we didn't really see too much of, I think Ricardo Lamas just basically got caught. Maybe he comes back, wins a couple fights, gets back into the same position he was at a few nights ago before he lost. I'm not so sure that's going to happen, but he certainly was set up to be in a good spot against Jose Aldo, but against Josh Emmett, it was just a very unfortunate situation for Lamas. And yeah, I think he's sort of just going to have this sort of gatekeeper role. And that's where we're going to see Ricardo Lamas at for the future. There's just too many guys in that division. You know, it's sort of like you make one mistake, it's gonna set you back take you so many steps back, and that's what happened to Ricardo Lamas, and it's very unfortunate, especially the way it happened to him. But yeah, that's the fighting game.
That is
I just wanted to jump in one last time. Just for the record, I mean, when I use the term gatekeeper, it's not necessarily a demeaning thing that I mean towards fighters. I think there's a difference between a guy like a journeyman fighter and a gatekeeper, where a gatekeeper can just be the guy that gets you to that next level if you want to be a title contender. You know, if a guy that's ranked number 10, he fights Ricardo Lamas and he beats him, that's probably a good enough reason to give that guy a title shot. So I don't mean it in any kind of disrespectful way, but I do think at this point that might be where Ricardo Lamas is. Like, as we said earlier, he's a guy in his mid-30s, and you know, he's coming off a big loss, a pretty devastating loss for his career. I think it's going to be hard for him to climb his way back up the ladder into title contention. So I think by default, that kind of makes him a gatekeeper, but that doesn't mean that he's a bad fighter. I mean, we've seen throughout his career, he's only really lost at the top of the top of the 145-pound division. I think his losses against Jose Aldo, Max Holloway, you know, guys like that. So, I mean, he's not losing to any kind of scrubs. And, you know, up until this past weekend, you know, that's the only unknown fighter that we've seen Ricardo Lamas lose to. And as we said, it was just, you know, he got caught by a vicious left hook. So by gatekeeper, I'm not necessarily saying that his career is over, that he'll never contend again, but that just means that if a fighter that's ranked lower than Ricardo Lamas beats Ricardo Lamas, that's good enough to propel that fighter into contendership.
Well, with you trying to explain yourself, I think now you kind of clarify that you call it, when you say gatekeeper, you really mean doormat. Hey, you step on this rug, you got to go in the house afterwards. That's what it kind of sounded like to me, Leo, but I digress.
That's the name of the game, brother. I mean, if a young lion is going to go in and step against the wily veteran, and the young lion wins, I mean, that's just the arrival of the new younger guy. That's the arrival of the new generation. So, it's not a term of disrespect. I think if anything, it's just a term of reverence for guys like Ricardo Lamas, who've been in the game for so long that a victory over you can really do a lot of wonders for a younger fighter's career.
Now, I totally mean what you when you do use that term. I totally get you. I'm just giving you a hard time about it. But, no, and it's true. At 35 years old, you know, it is hard to see Ricardo Lamas going on a run at 145 where, okay, you know what, now he can get himself back in the title contention. But as David pointed out, maybe if he gets himself a couple of decent wins, you know, it's always a possibility. You never know with injuries, with fighters moving out of the division, retirements, or whatever the case may be. You just never know. So we'll see how it goes. With this knockout, I definitely think he should take some time off. I'm not sure when he's eligible to come back, but if Chad Mendes, who I think is coming back at some point in 2018, when he comes back, maybe him and Ricardo Lamas could because dance in the octagon once again. Maybe that's too high up of competition for Mendez, given how long he was off. Okay, I get it, but if he's willing to do it, I say, hey, Lamas Mendez too. That could be pretty fun. Speaking of pretty fun, welterweight class that we were definitely looking forward to, that we were saying, hey, this is going to be a fun fight to watch, was Mike Perry versus Santiago Ponzinibbio. Ponzinibbio gets the decision victory over Mike Perry. It was a unanimous, but it was a back-and-forth fight, and it was very entertaining. I felt, for the most part, I certainly saw Ponzinibbio pulled away and kind of showed that I'm ranked top 10 for a reason here, bro. You're good, but there's levels to this. Leo, what did you make of Ponzinibbio's victory over Mike Perry?
Yeah, I'm so glad the fight delivered as I was expecting it to, because it was kind of flying under the radar a little bit behind RDA and Robbie Lawler, but this was one of the fights I was looking forward to the most, and I was really impressed with Mike Perry. I actually thought Ponzinibbio was going to run through him in a much more dominant fashion, and I did see a couple of limitations in Mike Perry's game. His footwork was not necessarily the greatest I've seen. I think he still has a little bit of development to go in there, but I mean, what a heart on this guy. Ponzinibbio just could not put him away. Both of these guys are very heavy hitters, and they both took the best of each other. So I was really impressed with Mike Perry, you know, his chin and his determination to stay in there. But as you said, I think Ponzinibbio is the much more technical fighter, and he found a way to pull away in that fight. And I think he showed his dominance in the fight. I did see at the end, he looked a little bit gassed, and there was a weird moment in the last 10-15 seconds of the fight where they were just kind of staring at each other and not necessarily wanting to engage. But when you've been through a 15-minute war, you really can't blame these guys. And it's one of those fights where it was so entertaining and so back and forth and so close that it kind of rises the stock of both of the fighters. I don't think Mike Perry really loses much by losing to a top contender like Ponzinibbio. And I feel sorry to say it, you know, for Ponzinibbio, because I really felt his want for the contendership, you know, in his post-fight interview. But, it's hard to say it, because he's won, like, what, eight, nine fights in a row, but still not quite enough to get him over to a top contender fight. I think he still maybe has one more to go before he can claim a title shot. But a win against Mike Perry, and an entertaining win against Mike Perry, that certainly puts him in a lot of fans' eyes. And I think this could possibly be a star in the making.
David, what about you? The fight did deliver as promised, even though it flew a little bit under the radar. Even though Mike Perry lost, did he really lose given the performance that he put on? Or in Ponzinibbio, afterwards, he did call for the winner of RDA, Robbie Lawler, at 10. Does he jump all the way up that high? Or slow your roll, young man, slow your roll. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, great, great fight. I mean, this was really probably the main event for me. I mean, I was really excited for this fight, almost as much as the RDA Robbie Lawler fight. And it certainly brought the fireworks. I didn't give Mike Perry much of a chance. I mean, if you remember last week, I thought, you know, he's going to get kind of run over by Ponzinibbio. And there were times where that was happening, but there were times where Perry was sort of imposing his will on Ponzinibbio, and it was just a fun fight. I think absolutely I'm ready to see Ponzinibbio take a big step up and take a huge fight. I think he's ready. I think it'll be great for his career, and I think it'll be a great sign to see just where Ponzinibbio is at in his career. I mean, give him a top three guy, you know. So let's see how Ponzinibbio does. Maybe give him I don't know. I don't like playing matchmaker. I don't like fantasizing about fights that I know aren't going to happen. But I do know that Ponzinibbio is certainly ready to take a huge step up in contendership for his next fight. As for Mike Perry, I'm very impressed by him, and I wouldn't. He was a pretty big underdog in this fight anyway, so I wouldn't take much stock away from Mike Perry. I mean, he came out, he put on a hell of a show. He certainly impressed me. I didn't really give him much of a chance, being the big underdog that he was. But he came out, and if if there was like a point spread for fighting, he certainly covered it, because I just thought he looked so damn impressive. And I wish, this is one of the fights where I wish both guys could win, because they just, you could tell that they both wanted it so bad. Their hearts were in the octagon that night. And I thought Ponzinibbio was clearly the winner of the fight. But I think Mike Perry doesn't hurt his stock very much. I don't think he's really taking any steps back by losing this fight, because not a lot of people expected him to win anyway. And a lot of people didn't expect him to come out and perform the way he did. So I was impressed.
No, certainly. I mean, I truly do feel that in watching this fight, walking away from it, you know, as I opposed the question to you, there really wasn't a loser in this fight. Mike Perry was unranked, taking on a top 10 fighter in Ponzinibbio. So there was that steep hill he had to climb there, but he certainly showed that he is game. And even though he couldn't land, you know, the big Mike Perry knockout that he's done his entire career, he certainly showed that, hey, I'm still game, even if I can't knock you out, to hang in here with the best of the best. And Ponzinibbio, who really put his name on the map, I believe, with a lot of fans, summer when he knocked out Gunnar Nelson, it was like, whoa, wait a minute, who's this guy? And then he goes into this fight, and then we really do see he's not just a one-punch knockout artist. He certainly is somebody who has a wide range of skills, can certainly put together and follow a very good game plan to isolate his opponents. And he is somebody I'm definitely looking forward to seeing in the future. And it also helps that afterwards he was willing to say, hey, forget number 8, forget number 7, bump all these other guys. I want RDA, or I want Robbie Lawler. Whoever wins, let's fight and let's go at it for number 1 contendership. Hey, I certainly think he makes a good case. Maybe the winner of Carlos Condit and Neil Magny, especially if it's Carlos Condit who fight next weekend, maybe Ponzinibbio can make a case to fight one of them. Excuse me. Darren Till's out there. That's a big possibility. But, man, is that dude a monster. So it's certainly going to be fun to see Ponzinibbio and Mike Perry's next fight. I know Mike Perry, the big thing would have been if he would have won, him and Darren Till would have been a tremendous fight to take on. That certainly would have been fun, but Darren Till has stated Mike Perry's still on his radar, so maybe in the future we'll get that one. Real quick, this one was a little bit interesting, and this is the last one we'll cover on the card. Glover Teixeira gets a TKO victory over Misha Sirkunov, and afterwards he goes over to their light heavyweight champion, Daniel Cormier, who was on commentary, calling for a fight. Guys, are we so bad in the light heavyweight division that Glover Teixeira, no disrespect to him, but in his late 30s, could be possibly next in line for a title shot? Leo, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm still partial to the Alexander Gustafsson fight, you know, the rematch against Daniel Cormier, but I think that is indeed the state of the light heavyweight division. It's the thinnest division in the UFC, and you know, even Daniel Cormier, who's already lost the title twice, technically, he's already in a position where he's going to have to start recycling these old former contenders. So, yeah, it's unfortunate, but I think with one impressive victory, Glover Teixeira certainly does put his name in the hat to contend for the title. And, you know, I'm not necessarily mad about it, but it's not necessarily the most exciting matchups that I look forward to in the light heavyweight division, but unfortunately, it's the only ones.
David, I come to you. Alexander Gustafsson just had shoulder surgery, so he's out for a minute. The light heavyweight division, which at one point in time was the deepest division in the promotion, now is truly one of the thinnest. Is Glover Teixeira going 1-1 in his last two? Do you think he's got a legit argument that he could be next in line, or does he need to beat someone like an OSP, a Jimmy Manoa, somebody like that, to maybe further his case? Or can he maybe sit back and wait for the winner in next month's showdown and say, yeah, I'm next?
Oh, man. Did we already forget about the triple uppercut from earlier this year? I mean, this guy got uppercutted by Alexander Gustafsson 3 times in a row. I've never seen anything like that. And now he's calling for a title shot. Are you kidding me? You can't get triple uppercutted and then call for a title shot after you win your next fight. I don't think that's fair to anybody. I don't think that's fair to me. I don't think that's fair to you. I don't think that's fair to anybody. I think Alexander Gustafsson
I don't know what his recovery time is going to be, but I think clearly he should be getting the next title shot. I thought he won the first fight. It was a split decision. It was a close fight. I thought it was a little bit of a robbery. I thought Gustafsson won the first fight against DC, and I think he's got a pretty good shot to win again in the second fight because he fights a lot more like – he's more similar to John Jones, and he'll give DC a lot more trouble than anyone else in the light heavyweight division will. You know, as Connor would say, these are just facts. I think that Volkan Ozdemir, that fight's going to be interesting. I don't want to count Ozdemir out. I don't want to say, oh, you know, Gustafsson, DC, or DC, Teixeira. I don't even want to entertain the idea of Glover Teixeira. I think OFE should be higher up on the list after he got a St. Preux choke, back-to-back St. Preux chokes. I think that's more impressive than what Glover Teixeira did in 2017. So I don't want to see Teixeira anywhere near a belt anytime soon. I mean, maybe if he fights OSP. I'm so confident. This is such a joke. I'm so confident OSP will get a St. Preux choke against Glover Teixeira. That's how much of a joke I think that this has become. But I really want to see OSP. If in the interim, if Gustafsson's out, I'd want to see OSP because he's looked pretty good the last few months. I think that's more logical than Glover Teixeira, and if anything, put them in a matchup together. I'm pretty sure 99 times out of 100, OSP is going to win. But yeah, I think that's more a fair fight or an interesting fight than Teixeira versus DC.
Damn, David, tell us how you really feel, brother.
I mean, seriously, man. I mean, I don't know what Glover did to you personally, man. Look, I don't know if he denied you an autograph, a picture.
I lost a big parlay against Anthony Johnson when he went out and just got knocked out by Anthony Johnson.
I guess so, man. But damn, don't blame Teixeira because you got a gambling problem. Jesus Christ, man. I felt bad over here. I'm not going to pile on it anymore because I think David just went like a mile high with that. But I do kind of agree that, you know, I don't think Glover Teixeira should be next in line for a title shot. If nothing else, maybe he should take on Jimmy Manuel for a number one contender's bout, okay? I am dead serious. I do not know, with John Jones not being in the division, I do not know why we are now seeing some of the middleweights who are big for the division, why they are not moving up to light heavyweight to try to look. Chris Weidman, he just beat Kelvin Gastelum, and he's top five in the division. I get that. But at some point in time, physically with your body and just your overall skill set, you don't want to wait too long before moving up to try to make a run in light heavyweight. I know Luke Rockhold and Daniel Cormier, they're very close friends. They're teammates or former teammates. I don't know with Luke Rockhold's situation. So I get why maybe he doesn't want to do it, but the time is now to make a move on the light heavyweight division. Now, don't get me wrong. That's not to say that that Daniel Cormier or Volkan Ozdemir, that they're easy targets. I'm not saying that. But your road to the title shot is much easier at light heavyweight now than it's ever been, especially when, you know, that one guy, you know, kind of John Jones, you know, John Bones Jones, he's in trouble, so he's not there to kill you right now. I say, why not go for it? You get one, two fights, victories at 205, you got a crack at it.
That is until, you know, John Jones comes back and, you know, you're in trouble, so you might as well just take advantage of it now.
You know, while you can. So that is something I would definitely like to see going forward from there. Now, that was UFC on Fox. Some good cards. I definitely thought it was good. I want to ask you guys this because it was brought up earlier when you said that the card didn't do well numbers-wise as far as viewers tuning in, which is unfortunate. And I want to ask both of you guys this. It's a topic we've talked about many, many times, so it's not something new. Is it on the UFC to is it not the UFC's responsibility to make sure that they're promoting these cards much better than they are? I mean, don't you almost want to just throw promotions on all the Fox games on Sunday to say, hey, be sure to tune into this card coming up in 2 weeks. Next week, here's the card. Social media posts, as much exposure as you possibly can. Is it not the UFC's responsibilities, or do the fighters maybe need to take some responsibility and say, hey, even if I got to do it myself, let me go on social media. Let me start a, let me do live Q&As. Let me do video chats. Let me do everything I can to promote my fight coming up to get fans excited about it and aware of it. Who's to blame here for this? Because 2017 certainly saw a lot of good cards, pay-per-view and fight night cards, not do so well ratings-wise. Who's it more so on, the promotion or the fighters? And, Leo, I'll start with you.
Okay, so I know I'm always the first one to call out the UFC for lack of promotion or just poor promotion, but I think I'm in my own little world here along with you guys and, you know, the rest of the hardcore fans in that I'm not someone who waits for the product to come to me. I'm the one who seeks the product. I go to the websites. I go to the UFC website. I watch the YouTube videos and the press conferences and everything involved. So I'm not necessarily the target audience for the marketing team, and that's probably why I don't see enough marketing. You know, I might see the occasional billboard here in Las Vegas, but I don't watch NFL football. I really don't watch any kind of television where I see any commercials or anything like that. So that's probably why I'm not seeing any marketing from the UFC. I honestly don't know lately how good their marketing machine is, but at the same time, I'm more appreciative of fighters like a Robbie Lawler, who's not necessarily out there talking all kinds of shit, saying all kinds of crazy things. He's just kind of showing up to the press conference because he has to, but I know that he's going to show up to the fight, and that's really what I want to see. So I can't necessarily blame the fighters for not promoting the fights enough. I think the biggest blunder that UFC fighters make when they complain about promotion is when they don't call their shots properly after a big victory. I think one of my favorite parts of fight night is, you know, obviously second to the fights, is what they're going to say in the post-fight interview right there in the octagon. That's when the fights are made. That's when people's imaginations start running wild about all these possibilities. So that's the only thing I really expect out of a fighter is just call out your shot and make yourself a good promo, like a pro wrestling style, you know. Not necessarily talk shit, just put it in people's minds that you know exactly what you need to do to get yourself over to either a title shot or a number one contender shot or something like that. But, I mean, there is some responsibility for both sides. I mean, the promoter's job is to promote and the fighter's job is to basically get his name out there in people's eyes. So there's probably a halfway point that they could meet, but I really can't complain too much about the UFC marketing when it's not necessarily targeted towards me, and therefore I miss the marketing because of that.
Trust me, Leo, you're not missing a whole lot. The UFC just started doing better on their official fight card posters, so trust me, you're not missing a whole lot. As somebody that does watch other sports, you're not missing a whole lot in that regard, but good stuff. David, what about you? Do you think it's more so on the promotion or the fighters to get it out there? I mean, generally, they're both going to reap the rewards by doing so. So why are we seeing more of it?
I think it's sort of on both, but more so it's on the promotion. I mean, for this card, I didn't really see a lot of advertising behind it, and it was on Fox. I mean, this was on a major network, and I don't know how to explain this, but this weekend a year ago, Paige VanZant lost to Michelle Waterson in front of 2.7 million viewers on TV, which was the Fox record, or the December Fox record, excuse me. And granted, you had Uriah Faber, who was retiring that night as well, which was another big fight on that card. But I feel like Robbie Lawler versus, as a fan, I would rather watch Robbie Lawler versus RDA than Paige VanZant versus Michelle Waterson. But Paige VanZant versus Michelle Waterson had damn near twice as many viewers. So explain that to me. I think it's simple. Paige VanZant and Michelle Waterson didn't trash talk each other. Robbie Lawler and RDA didn't trash talk each other. They just didn't really promote it that well. I think a year ago for the Paige VanZant Michelle Waterson card, a few of my friends who are very casual fans will watch only the biggest pay-per-views. They watched the Paige VanZant versus Michelle Waterson card because they heard about it. They knew it was happening and it was an interesting enough card for them to watch. I thought this past weekend's card was was also a very interesting card, and I think it delivered. I thought it was very entertaining, but it just didn't have the marketing dollars behind it that Paige VanZant, Michelle Waterson had behind them. You know, I think it mostly lies on the promotion, and I think that's evidence of that. Where the more commercials people see, the more billboards people see, the more people are going to tune in, and it's as simple as that. You know, you're not going to watch the fight if you don't know it's happening. And I think that was the problem. I think if they do a better job promoting, I think they get better ratings. It's that simple.
Now, certainly, I completely agree with you. And wow, just think, a year does go by fast. That is true. You know, I think the Michelle Waterson, Paige VanZant, it drew a lot of viewers because, you know, it was one of the first times, one of, not the first, but it was one of the first times women were headlining a card. Not to sound sexist, but they are very attractive women, so that can draw your attention as well and say, wait, these women fight? You mean they're not bulky and kind of scarred like these type of women fight? Huh, okay, I want to check that out. And then, as you guys both pointed out, there was promotion behind it to let you know, hey, this is going on. And I feel like the UFC really needs to take a step forward in 2018 real quick. One of the reasons I think the whole Floyd Mayweather thing is coming about is because what do we have in 2017? We didn't have no Conor McGregor in the UFC, no Brock Lesnar. We had one John Jones fight, but it was mere by controversy, and he's been gone the rest of it. We don't have, no Ronda Rousey. CM Punk didn't turn out to be the fighter that we was hoping for. We don't really have another superstar. GSP came back for one fight, but now he's out again, and the one fight was at the end of the year. We went through an entire year with really out any major stars in the UFC. And I think 2018, the UFC wants to try to bring stars together, or at least out. And I think that's what the Floyd Mayweather thing. And I think the UFC can do a better job in promoting fighters who aren't trash targets. As you guys pointed out, Robbie Lawler's not a guy that's going to talk trash. So you can't just put him on a media circuit and expect him to sell the fight. But if you hype up, but if you put a promotion behind them with a promotional highlight video and show what this guy does in the ring, oh my gosh, how does that get people excited? So I definitely think 2018, the UFC needs to do a better job in that regard. And I want to end the show with this. Of course, next week's show will be the last one of the year, so we'll talk more about it. But I want to ask you guys this. Going into 2018, what's the one thing the UFC needs more than any, like above everything else? And you guys can take that wherever you want to, but just pick one thing that the UFC needs to happen in 2018 for it to be, quote-unquote, a success. David, I'll start with you.
Oh, thank you for starting with me. There's one thing the UFC needs. Conor McGregor, plain and simple. They need him to fight. They need him to fight a few times. 2016 was their biggest year ever. You had Conor fighting twice. You had Ronda fighting once. John Jones fought once. If you want a repeat of 2016, but now Conor's bigger than ever today. If you want a repeat of 2016, you need to market Conor. Conor markets himself. Let's be real, but he needs to get out in the octagon. He needs to fight. We're not even sure if he's going to come back to fight anymore. after like everything he's been through, getting into bar fights. You know, he's more interested in bar fights than octagon fights right now, it seems like. But you get him into the octagon, you get a couple of good fights. Tony Ferguson, Khabib, I mean, there's so many interesting fights for him in the UFC. You get those fights done. He's been holding up the lightweight division. You get him to come back for a few fights, and that's it. The UFC is set. The UFC is good. That's the number one thing they need. And I also think if John Jones beats his case, I know his hearing is next month. If John Jones beats his case and then we end up getting that 4th of July fight week, John Jones, Brock Lesnar card that they were teasing this past August, I think that's not going to hurt either. I think that'd be great too. If John Jones can come out and beat the case, I mean, I was pretty shocked that Luis Ortiz beat his case, and now he's fighting Deontay Wilder on March 2nd. And I'm excited for that. Number two and number three heavyweights, and Deontay Wilder wins. You know, Anthony Joshua, he's coming for you. if John Jones some if Luis Ortiz miraculously beat his case, his steroid case, I feel like that's a little bit of a confidence booster to John Jones too. So if you get John Jones to beat his case next month, you get Conor McGregor back for March at T-Mobile Arena. You got him to fight again, maybe once more in 2018, hopefully twice more. I think that's I think the UFC will have its best year ever. I know it's a little bit of a tall order, and none of that is for sure right now, but those are two things that the UFC is really hoping for right now.
Good stuff indeed. Leo, what about you? What's the one thing you think 2018 needs to happen for the UFC?
Yeah, I mean, you got to agree with David. Conor McGregor certainly is priority number 1A for the UFC, and we've said it time and time again that this is a star-driven sport, and you need your stars to be out there and show up for your products. So, you know, people are going to be tuning in. I know I keep mentioning Max Holloway every single week, but to me, this is one of the biggest stars that the UFC has on their roster at the moment, at least, you know, out of the active fighters that they have. Max Holloway is certainly their biggest draw, or could become their biggest draw anyway. So I think I am hopeful that this is the blessed era, and hopefully the UFC is going to start doing a better job promoting him and putting him in big fights and basically introducing people to their new big star. So, there's a conspiracy out there that the UFC wants to bring in Floyd Mayweather because they don't have any contenders at 205. So maybe Floyd Mayweather against Daniel Cormier for the UFC light heavyweight championship might happen in 2018, because there certainly is no one else at light heavyweight to contend. So look into it, bro.
I'll definitely talk to my sources and see what I can scum up from that particular rumor. That is a hot one. I'll jump right on it. I think the biggest thing that they need to happen in 2018, they need their fighters to stay healthy. 2016 was a rare year where we saw most of the big fights that were scheduled to happen, and they happened. I can't really remember in 2016 many big fights that got scrapped due to injury, and that's unusual in the world of MMA. I think a couple years before, they either 2013 or 2014 was the same way. They need their fighters to be healthy. The biggest, as much as they need stars, as much as they need big name attractions, what they also need is consistency with their fight cards. One of the biggest derailers of a fight or a fight card itself is injuries that happen, because then it kind of takes away the momentum. Think about this past card that just happened. If Jose Aldo was still on the card, it probably would have did a little bit better viewership-wise, not because he's such a mega star and draw, no, but you have a former champion on it. You have someone that people are familiar with, whereas, you know, we all said Josh Emmett was somebody you really didn't hear much about, so you're like, it's one fight on there I'm kind of excited about, maybe two. But with Aldo, that easily makes it three. I definitely feel if the fighters, and it's not their fault, but if fighters can stay healthy throughout the year, not get caught up with PEDs, not get caught up with weight cuts, if they can stay healthy throughout the year, I think that we'll see the UFC have a better year that way, because we'll get the fights we were promised, we'll get some good competition, and we'll start to see guys move up and down the rankings for some good matchups and title shots in the future. So if fighters can stay healthy, I think that'll be the biggest thing. But obviously, we'll talk more about it next week. We'll review 2017. We'll preview 2019. David, as always, man. Leo, as always, you guys bring it each and every week. I want to thank you guys for coming on once again. Great show, as always, man. And look forward to next week, man. It's the last show of 2017. Wow, that is going to be something in itself. So from everybody here on Inside the Octagon, guys, be sure to tune in every Wednesday this year and next year from 4 to 5:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on blogtalkradio.com. For David, for Leo, and myself. Till next week, everybody. Peace.
Explosive. West Coast shit. My nigga is way to track. Girls that used to turn they back. Causing me to yank they arm and pose like I would do them all. Now I'm saying thank you because they tell me my shit's a bomb. My niggas drinking cognac, smoking weed, always fat, more than one fire on.
nigga. Overdosage, imperial pistols, ferocious. Fuck a bitch, don't tease, bitch. Strip tease, bitch. Eat a bowl of these, bitch. Gobble a dick. Host forgot to eat a dick and shut the fuck up.